What's up, man? How you
Hey,
doing?
yeah, I'm fine, thanks. You?
Great. Andy's in the building.
Yeah, let's go.
I was like, we're going to the moon. And you're like, yeah, we're going to the moon, but first we need to build the rocket. And I was like, okay. Yeah, he knows what's up. Thanks for sitting down to do this. I think this is a, I was curious just to talk to you as an athlete, and then you came on board as a coach. So I think we can tell there's a lot of things that we want to talk about. I think a good intro to people though is let's kind of do the normal format, just so we can get to know you more as where you are as a racer. And if we have time, we'll touch on coaching stuff too. But I just think the pearls that you'll give off from having been a pro for so long are going to be incredible. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So first question, I just tried to skip over this one with somebody else. Who is, and is it pronounced Bach? I always been meaning to ask you that.
I think no guys from America or New Zealand or Australia can pronounce it, so it's Bike.
So first question, please pronounce your name and then tell us who you are.
Okay, so my name is Andy Bike. I'm 32 years old, married. Four kids, two dogs, one cat. And yeah, I'm a pro cyclist and also a coach now at Evo.
Awesome. What I know the answer to this, but to give context to everybody else, how old were you when you turned pro?
So let's say we in Slovenia it's like that you go to Continental with because we at the time we had five Continental teams, so I went straight away to pros. But so let's say from 18, yeah. But
Yeah,
I
18.
also know, yeah, so I could leave from that, yeah.
Super young. And especially for a lot of the US contingent listening, so many of us don't find this sport until much later in life. So you've been racing pro for 14 years, which is incredible. What was the previous from 0 to 17? What was that like in terms of sports? Did you have any siblings? Were you riding all the time? When did you find cycling? Give us a quick like origin story.
Okay, so both of my grandparents were my granddad were cyclists, so yeah, that's runs in the family.
Cool.
But when I was young, I didn't like cycling. I didn't like it. I
What
mean,
did you
I
like
always
about it?
I like more. I will say soccer now. So for the
Okay.
American, I like
Football.
basketball more. Yeah, and I like hockey more. And for like when I was young, this had more appeal to me than cycling.
Okay.
And then when I was, I think, around seven, yeah, I went to a race. Just which was like a school race, and I won. And it was so, I learned how to ride without hands for like a week before. So that was my first
Like,
race, and I could, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But then I till 12 or 13 years old, I didn't do no, I didn't do. I mean, I rode the bike, but I preferred other sports. And even after, in the winter, I always played some other sports or handball or basketball or something else. And then yeah, at one moment, yeah, then it hooks you up and you're finished.
So
And
that happened to you also. You kind of got that bug and you were like, okay, cycling's my jam.
Yeah.
What year was that?
Yeah. I think when I was like 15, 16,
Okay.
and you start winning, and we did a lot of international races. So I raced mainly in Italy. And yeah, there's like the competition is big. And also, there was in Slovenia at that time, there was a lot of good guys. So, you get this feeling of being competitive all the time, and you actually really had to work for it. And yeah, then I was hooked, and that's
Were
it.
you hooked on doing well, or because you're doing well in these races and you're young and it's probably like a good like, hey, I'm crushing it. Were you hooked on the sport more, like just going out to ride? Was it a combination of all of those, do you think?
I think it's always a combination because if you don't, if a certain aspect of when you're young, it will and it bothers you. then it maybe killed the dream. Yeah, but what was good that we were always we had a really strong junior team, so like the numbers were there, and we were always a really tight pack. We trained together, we went to school together, we partied together, and you know, that's something that then it makes it easier for the hard moments. Yeah.
Do you think it actually came up in a couple other podcasts, other people that played other sports or, you know, had multiple things going on? Do you see any of the previous sports that you were more invested in earlier having some transfer skill over to cycling?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for sure.
What do you think? What were the ones that stand out to you?
I think that's a lot of athletes have this problem. That when you're doing only some, let's say, endurance sport or that cycling or running, there's like this continuous movement that's mainly focused on going forward. Mm-hmm. Where in other sports like hockey or handball or soccer, there's a lot of more lateral movement, and you also have to like think what is happening behind you.
Yes.
You get this more the feeling of your body in a space, and also your hand to eye coordination gets much, much better than just doing cycling.
I have to stop using this example because people will probably be tired of hearing it, but it's the one that I think of often, is that basketball, my position, I constantly was having to know who's behind me, but also keeping an eye on the ball up front. And so just what they call court awareness. And I really feel like when there's times in a race, when you're trying to see who's about to counter, who's launching, it's almost second nature of being able to take inventory of what 20 other dudes are thinking without thinking about it almost. It's a weird transference. I'm always curious what people draw from other sports. And when you said handball, I'm like, that's got to be a similar thing. Like there's just so much going on at once.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
In basketball, when rookies come to NBA, they say, oh, the game is so fast. The game is so fast. And then the game gets slower and slower.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, same in a sprint, yeah? Mm-hmm. So when you do a sprint and the race feels fast around you, you can make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And when the race feels slow and when you're used to it, so like from basketball or some other sport, you get used to these feelings, then it's also easier to take the right decision, let's say in a sprint.
It's good to say that too, to remind people. I think back to early races. I mean, that's how I feel. If I do a pro race, I'm like, it's just chaotic and I'm like holding on for dear life. If it's me and my peers, I have more experience than most of them. And you can see the people that have like just come up to like an elite race and things are just moving faster. And once it slows down, you don't have to think about everything. It just second nature takes over and you can react and be more. And I think that then allows you to be more proactive because you're not just, as I say, react, it makes me think you're not just reacting to other people. You're thinking, what might other people do? What can I do to put myself and my team in the best position for what might happen? And there's like five iterations of that. And it's just this, like, I forget what they used to call it in school. It's like a decision tree. Like, and then you're just, there's so much. That's what I love about this sport. It's just, there's so much going on. It's crazy.
I mean, you always have to be adaptive. Yeah. You cannot stick to the plan. Like the plan can, you know, let's say if you're riding in France. Yeah. You know, there's a plan till the next corner. Yeah.
I like that. It's a very, and maybe I should start saying this again in podcasts, it's a very like cap 4 or 5 thing. I've coached a few people with like, okay, well, FYI, next weekend is my weekend to get in the break, so we need to train for that. I'm like, wait, what are you guys having this conversation? Like, who's in the break that week? That should not be how the race goes, but so let's talk about training in terms of, I'm actually really curious. So let's break it between like you're 18 to 24 years old and then you're 25 to now at 32 years old. What's been the biggest change? Maybe like big things you've learned about yourself or just changes in training because it's such a long span of time.
I was lucky that I always had like really good coaches that knew what they're doing. So they never burned me. Like I was never, I mean, I had 1 year when I was 3rd year U23, I had 97 starts in 1 year.
Wow.
So yeah. And I was never burned. Yeah.
What do you think, let me jump in there. What do you think were some of the things that they did that helped you stay? So you must have been racing February to October. Like it's so many races. Yeah. What do you think were some of the things that they did or made you not do to be able to handle that type of load, especially at that age?
A lot of recovery. Working also on like just mental stuff. So you know, a lot of times you get, your body will be okay in a week, but your head will be damaged for 3 months. And yeah, you also, you know, when you are also, people think that that the head doesn't, you know, like when you will do everything, if you train all the intervals, it will be okay, but it actually won't be if your head is not okay. Mm-hmm. And what we did was we trained really, like we trained with the head. Yeah? We trained slower. I had a lot of recovery in between. And we also, what we did was, so let's say if I did 4 hours, I did slow. And then we did a lot of motor pacing, which covered a lot of time, a lot of intervals. I know it's not like, it should be, it's like motor pacing should be for the pros because it's dangerous. But yeah, that was.
But it's good to be just going that fast through space.
I mean, it's like Mathieu van der Poel does for 5 hours in the winter, yeah.
when you say head stuff, are you talking like confidence, how to bring about internal motivation? What do you think is the most important head stuff that an athlete needs to bring to the table or work on?
For me, it's consistency. So sometimes my head just goes like from high to low to high to low.
Mm-hmm.
And then that these low parts are more shallow, you know? That's mm-hmm. the thing that you need to be careful. Yeah.
I think it's more common than people want to put out there. And I actually just posted, I haven't posted it yet. In our next episode of Bike Radio, Josh kind of talked about some motivation coming and going. And he's had a tough season, stepping up to the next level. And while he's learning so much, when you go from winning and then you're not winning because you're racing faster people, he's like, we talked about it. And then afterwards he was honest, like, man, do I sound really lame saying that? And I'm like, no, so many of us go through that. It's when you're earning your stripes, cutting your teeth, however you want to say it, like it can be a tough time mentally. It's, hey, I'm going to take up this sport and go lose for a year to hopefully then win the next year. A lot of people don't do well with that. And I think it's totally normal. So to hear you say that is really good for people to hear.
I mean, mentally is really hard. Yeah. Cycling, also stage races, it's really hard. You don't see your family. Even now it's with the family, it's even harder when you see that, you know, let's say your wife is having a hard time with the kids at home and you are stuck in a race. And you're not doing good, and you just need to go through it. And but now for me it's easier because I know that in the end but when you're young, that for me it was much, much harder.
Can you share and share only what you want to share? Having a family, being a pro, this actually hasn't come up in a podcast yet. A lot of people have a tough time with this, whether it's them getting their spouse on board with kind of like this life with an athlete. How did you guys figure out a way to make it work when you're traveling, you're at a race, you come home, you might be tired. What are some maybe tips you could give to people that you found super beneficial for your family?
It's hard. Mm-hmm. You cannot go through that, you know. It's hard. And also when I come home, I know that maybe Monday, Tuesday, I'm like a zombie walking around and I need to switch on already, which is hard. But what is funny now that is sometimes I also spoke with other pros, and it's actually just really funny that you actually recover more in a stage race than when you're at home. And you, let's say I came fresher from like training camp than training at home, but otherwise, yeah, for my, it's harder for the spouse for sure than for me. And
sorry, keep going.
I know I have to give her all the credit, you know. Even now, she's with four kids, putting them to bed so I can be here. So, you know, I have to be really grateful that she supports me. That's
awesome. I think that's been the number, you know, the people that I talk with are more like myself. We found it later in life. So some people were with their spouse and then found cycling. And so it's like, it's, hey, I'm going to reintroduce this thing that's going to take over my life. And that's obviously a much more challenging thing than like when I met Chris, I was just like, hey, I ride a bike a lot. And he's like, okay, cool. I'm like, okay, whatever you think is a lot, multiply it by like four. And then you'll probably still be lower than, you know, like it's going to be a ton. So it's a lot of conversations though with amateurs of how you find the balance, and it has to be a balance. This has to work with their life. So
yeah,
it's, again, it's another good thing to hear from you who's at the highest level. Like, hey, it's tough. Like there's just a lot going on. And I laughed when you said, oh, I'll probably have more time when I'm racing, because when I'm at home, there's just four kids running around and I'm a husband and all these other things. So
yeah.
What's over the years, maybe what are some obviously things that are beneficial to being a bike racer are training and, you know, sleep, or maybe what are some small things that maybe had a big impact in your training that you've picked up? Like, man, I'm really glad I do this little thing. Is there anything that sort of has a little thing that makes a big difference?
Yeah. Well, I don't have that at the moment, but I think we need to start with sleep. Yeah. Sleep is really, really important.
Yeah,
it's important for keeping the weight down. It's important for the hormones. It's important for, you know, doing big blocks. It's also important just to be happy, you know, because when you wake up tired, you know, you're getting grumpy. Your cortisone is getting higher. You're in stress, and I think, yeah, sleeping is for me number one. I appreciate it now more than I didn't. And then, you know, it's all the little things. It's food, it's training, it's staying happy, which is also really important. Like, and also not being too obsessed with everything. Mm. Like finding the balance, you know, that you're happy with, you know, also have the balance if you are working. Like, it will be always juggling stuff around, and this balance that you're, you know, comfortable with, that's really important. And from training, I think first you need to be confident that your coach knows what he's doing and that you trust him. I think this trust part is really important. Like, you can second guess the coach or say, okay, I would rather do that, which is good also for our side, so we get the feedback. And feedback shouldn't be always positive, because from positivity, yeah, you can learn something, but not every time. Like, normally, you learn from when it goes wrong, yeah? Okay, now we need to adapt. And, but the trust part is really important. If you have a family, then also you need support from the family, which is also really important. And then, you know, this is little things. It's food, but for me, sleep and just being happy is something that, and you need to love this, otherwise it doesn't make sense.
You bring up a good point though about the feedback, and I was talking to somebody about how when you first start coaching somebody, if they've been training for a while, they have their way of doing things, and sometimes you almost need to let them do their thing to a little bit of failure rather than just butting in and being like, you need to do it my way. Because if you're so imposing on it, then they go out, like you say, and they're thinking in the back of their head, why am I doing this? I should be doing what I'm used to doing. So sometimes I'm a little bit more hands-off on certain people who are really experienced, let them go down. I'm like, hey, would you consider trying X, Y, and Z instead? This is why, you know, this is the result that we saw from the initial way. Let's try something different. And it's just that communication and learning, like you said, like we both grow through that process is really good. What's when everybody always is curious, pro cyclists, how much do you ride and what does the riding entail? And let's break this down into, let's say you had that huge, this is actually great. You had that huge year, 97 races or however many you said, February through like October. What is November, December, January look like? And then what are you doing throughout the season when you have all these races?
Okay. So I think the best is that we start in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. Now in COVID times, it's actually funny because you're not so tired because we had less races. But let's pretend that we are doing a normal season.
Yeah.
So normally, let's say I finish in October and start to mid of October. Then I do like a week to 10 days of winding down. So it's not like, and then I'm off. Yeah. I spend time with my family. I do a bit of running. So like I do maybe, let's say 7 to 10K per day,
okay. around
60 to 80K per week.
For how long?
Because I will say till now.
So let's say for about a month.
Yeah. This year I have, we are just renovating apartment, but normally I will be also doing some core stuff in between.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's too important to do this. And also, your body needs to be ready to hit the load. You know, you cannot just let it go. But it's also, I think, for us, it's important to rest. So we also get the hormones back to normality,
mm-hmm.
Which is really important that your body is really fully recovered. And also for the head, so you do something else. Because, some guys like you only do bike, some guys like me, we do something else, and everything is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let's say with December, we start to rack up hours. So let's say we go from 12 to 10, maybe 20-ish, 22, depends on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not mainly, let's say it's mainly based on bike if it's possible. Otherwise, you do something else like cross-country skiing. Maybe you go already to a training camp. Mm-hmm. And then we also put more strength exercises inside and just core yoga, stretching,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. And then you also start to get this feeling that you need to race soon. So, so you're getting impatient. And then I hate from January to March, or let's say now we start already in February, but I hate this period. You're just waiting for the race, training like an idiot, and nothing is coming. Days are dragging. I don't like to train. I train, I do everything what I need to do, but I like to race.
Okay.
And I this period is hard for me. Like I feel this urgency, to
put on the number. Have you ever gotten on Zwift and race there to like scratch that itch a little bit?
No.
Mm.
And that's because, now Zwift is like, let's say 3 years. And in the last 3 years, I think like I changed in this perspective that I really appreciate riding in the nature. And I always try to find some new road. Like in last 2-3 years, I discovered like maybe, 50, 60 roads that I never rode before.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Yeah. And I really focus on that. And I found such good climbs, such good roads. And it's, I would like to show to everybody how good these are. And you know, I'm so stupid I didn't do this before. And that's, yeah, and okay, where I live is also something is good that we have really okay weather, yeah, which also then benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of my teammates are racing in the winter, also Premier League. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
So wait, where are they racing right now?
I think last year they were racing in Premier League, yeah.
Where is that?
I don't know. I think they raced...
Premier League on Zwift.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because there's definitely people like Inigo San Milan talks about not having the downtime and how because of COVID, when the whole race schedule got squished towards October and November, and people then turned around and started racing again in late January, February, without hitting that reset button, it was really tough for people to bounce back and come back as strong as they were before. And I don't know, I don't have a problem with people racing every once in a while and doing some efforts here and there, but I just think the Zwift culture makes and promotes racing all year so that they can race all year.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to make you a better cyclist though in the long run. That's my own opinion. There's definitely people that will disagree with that, but it's usually the people that want to race Zwift. So I think if you want to be a road, gravel, mountain bike racer, you got to go in, do the base work, turn the intensity down a little bit. And it doesn't have to be off, but it just doesn't have to be Zwift racing. But,
I mean, okay. Like now people will say, okay, look at Wout van Aert and also look at Matthew Van Der Poel, mm-hmm. or even maybe Tom Pidcock.
Mm-hmm.
But they race now, but they had off till now, yeah? Okay, maybe they really unwind like for our perspective of the load, mm-hmm. they unwind it down.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of guys who race or they want to race Zwift all year, they do this like flat load, I would say. So the load is constant throughout the year. There is no ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that gets you stuck in some level, like you cannot really push more. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you also need to recover to get a step higher. Yeah, you cannot just push because yeah, your body will say no at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over a longer period of time when people have more of their own personal experience with it. Because there are a few people I know that I've raced against that I know did a lot of Zwift. They seem less dangerous this past year. And I don't think it was because I was that much stronger. I just felt like they weren't on a similar level. And I was like, huh, that's definitely a Zwifter. So not everybody. And like Van Aert and Vanderpool, they really have, you know, I wish everybody wants to have the high threshold, the high anaerobic capacity and can do everything. But unfortunately, we all can't do that. So we need to like...
No. They are superhuman. They are superhuman. Yeah, and they have 20 guys around them to only care about them. That's the mm-hmm. difference between a pro rider and, let's say, an amateur rider or, let's mm-hmm. say, a recreation rider.
Mm-hmm.
We have all the support. Right? Mm-hmm. We have masseurs, we have mechanics. We don't need to, you know, when you're in a race, you only need to eat, put the pin the number on. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, go to sleep. And you know everything else is someone is doing this for you.
Yeah.
So awesome. And also for training that you know everything is automatic. You just have to do what you do and just give the input back, and then it's much easier if you don't have to think so much. And yeah. They are worried, like Matthew Van Der Poel, and also I read about Van Aert. They are worried what this load, especially now because the season was so short, what this load will bring in the future for them.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a bad way. I mean, like, you can get burned, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then once you go over the line, then it's really hard to come back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw in the future in cycling that a lot of young guys, they wanted to do too much from the start. Like when you were U23, you know, too skinny, too much training, no eating, and then your body is so destroyed that maybe you have to end up your career, or you need 2-3 years to bounce back.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What's, yeah. Well, that's a good question. Have you ever trained too much, or did it where you felt like you were doing it incorrectly? And what did you do to correct that?
Yeah, I mean, there are times that, you know, you have a really good year and it's like, I need to, you know, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And then in one point, that, you know, especially if you race a lot, then this little bit more gets really, you know, fast. And first you lose your motivation, you don't sleep good, your hormone, you know, your hormone, people don't speak about hormones like they should, you know.
And we've got that podcast coming up, and that's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, some guys, you know, when they train so much, then they have problems with sex life.
Yeah.
And also, to correct the hormones, you need a lot of time, yeah. More than just physical recovery or muscle. And yeah, I've done that. I never done that in a way that I was totally destroyed for a year, but yeah, then you need to have, you know, 7 to 10 days off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go from there, yeah.
But mm-hmm.
you always need to have someone that tells you, okay, maybe that's too much.
Yeah. What do you think was your main limiter in racing, and what do you do to try to get better at that?
But my main limit is actually the head, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Just stay with that, like you said before, the up and down,
yeah.
The motivation. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, let's say you're going on a 20-minute, 15-minute climb, and, you know, it's the last climb of the day. You're going, you know, you're on the limit. Everybody's on the limit. And then, you know, like 1K to go, you said, it's too hard. It's too hard. Like, your legs normally could do it, but your head is like, I cannot suffer anymore. I cannot suffer. And that's really hard for me. Wait, 1 second. You see?
This is the key.
Okay, three. You see this?
The future cyclist.
I hope not. But yeah, that's my oldest one.
What's his name?
Oscar.
Oscar?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
What do you think if we shift to racing, what do you think then is what makes you feel ready for the race? So you're getting super antsy right now. Season is on the brink. What do you do before those first few races, if anything, to be like, okay, I'm ready to go?
Okay, I for me, first is that I did all the training.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no skipping, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, you feel that you've done everything like you should. And then, if you're, you know, in the start of the season, I really care about the weight. So the weight is good. And then I also try to focus seeing what other, not what other did in training, but like I really take care of, let's say if somebody raced before. So you check the results, check who is good, who is not, you know, who is already there. And so you have some perspective who you need not to follow, but, you know, so you have a race plan. For mm-hmm. me, race plan is really important. But
let me ask you this. What are you planning? Are you planning just based on the terrain? Are you planning based on who you're racing, what your team goal is? How does that, what's the plan going to be like?
Yeah. So first you plan on the terrain. Yeah. Like the race determines what will be it. Then what second is, you what can determine the race is, let's say start of the season, races are different than let's say from July on, as you know, in the second part things get more easier in terms of like people are not so nervous, but from the start you need to also take this in consideration that people are really nervous. You need to pay attention. You need to be always more maybe closer to the front, all the team together. So you pick your position in the bunch. There's more crashes from the start of the season because people are, everyone thinks, okay, now I did train, I went to training camp, I did everything right, and this will be my best season of my career. So everyone's really nervous, and you need to adapt to that. Yeah, you need to also as a team, you need to adapt, and as a team goes, yeah, I think you do a lot of trainings before together, so then you already know who is good, who, who will start doing results. But this can all every time change in the race. But normally we already know who are we racing on. But this is always a fluid moment.
Mm-hmm. What's up, Oscar? How's it going, man?
Клиент такой, эти мои клиенты такой, легко. Легко решил, он просто. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, now the second one is coming. Oi.
Hey,
help him.
Hey. How's it going?
That's my third one.
What's up, number three?
Number three. Yeah. Okay.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's also part of life.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now the second one came.
Number two. Yeah. Number two. Hey. Hello. How's it going? Hi. Hi. Where's number four?
Number four is, it's for 3 months old. It won't come now.
I love it. We're keeping that in the podcast.
You should.
What's the sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a second. Oh yeah. So the train, nerves, early season crashes, what else? What shifts when it's like July, August? You've been racing a few months. What are you guys talking about going into the race?
First you know already who is good, who is bad. Mm-hmm. Also from the, you get a picture who is also the teams which you have to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it much easier to be there. Also, people are not so nervous. People get tired. Someone lost motivation a little bit, and also for me, that's the best part of the year. I don't know why, but I was always doing good around our nationals or this time, and also in the summer. And then second part is much easier because people are, there's more space in the race. I'd say to move, and it's easier to read.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you think it's easier to read just because you've got more under your belt? It's like stays fresh a little bit. You've that like race mentality is just run on autopilot by that point.
I think it's I wouldn't say because you ran on, you get used to racing from the start, you lose a little bit, you get rusty, and then it's more easier. And there's also more races people are more spread out, through races, so it's also less people sometimes from the start. Okay. Whereas on the start of the season, it's always, let's say, a full pack, which is 180 to 175 riders.
So many people.
Yeah, and, everyone wants to win, everyone wants to win. Everyone thinks they did the best, and then in the summer, that also what is different is that also in the team itself, the roles get divided, so it's not like six guys thinks that can win, also in the team itself, the roles get more and more clear.
Okay, what do you think when you look back? What are the results that you're the most proud of so far that just doesn't even have to be the biggest race? What just is like a great race memory for you?
I was thinking about this question and I actually don't know. Like, I wouldn't say there were races that I did everything right. Like in, we did a U23 World Championships in Australia. Mm-hmm. I did everything right. Even on the last time, I had everything under control, and then someone crashed in front of me, like, okay to go.
Oh.
And yeah. And you know, it's like, oh, maybe I'll go for top 10, and then you're like, oh, fuck, yeah, 30, something. Damn. No one cares, you know? And the race that I did, absolutely horrible race. Like, you miss all the moves, you miss everything, you did everything wrong. And then in the end, you win, yeah? And that's why I cannot, it's hard for me to pick something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, oh man, I can only, those races where it's not your, like, nothing that you did, it's just the race happened to you. It's hard to swallow. I look back on some of those and it's not even that I'm disappointed in what happened. I'm disappointed that I didn't get a chance to see what could have happened. And, you know, yeah, racing, it's a bummer, but.
Yeah, I mean, like, what happened to me, like, I raced now for so long, and what happened to me on now the first time? So we did, I think, stage three in Coral Race, which is a 2.1 race.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a 15 minute 430 average climb towards the end. And you know, though, I remember the course from 2 years ago, and I said, okay, I know what I have to do. And then in the last corner, I was running so behind in position 3. And normally, it's like Formula One, you have to always be careful what's coming from the, so let's say, from the inner side
mm-hmm.
of the corner. So if someone tries to, you know,
chop
you on the inner side, yeah chop you. And with that, I forgot on my outer side, and I because of that, two guys chopped me, and I was in the inner side, so I lose all the speed. And you know, from fighting for the win to fighting for position, you know, 6,
mm-hmm.
it's hard. So you know, sometimes you do everything right, and then you know last corner, and
mm-hmm.
you know, in the race, which is you know, which is why cycling is so interesting.
Interesting is a good word for it. Yes. Yeah. What do you think? You'd mentioned nutrition before. What are some big topics or things when you think about nutrition, whether it's during, before, or after? How do you think about nutrition in order to optimize your performance?
Eat.
I'm good at that. Don't eat too much, though. Yeah. My biggest thing is people don't eat enough carbs in my mind, but you know, I think some people are scared of food.
I was going through the, let's say, when I 2007 2010 or mm-hmm. 2012, there was a really big period in pro cycling that you know, like food restriction. Skinny. You don't need to eat in the race. You know, everything was about not the power, but the weight. You know, be skinny as you can. That's all. But there were other, you know, we have to say this loud. There were people had other, let's say, gasoline.
Yeah.
which then propelled them to the result. And now I think it's like the last couple of years when cycling, we have, it's cleaner. Yeah. We have to say it's much, much cleaner. I won't say it's clean because I can only vouch for myself,
mm-hmm.
but, and it will be always a dark side of cycling or sports because, you know, it's money involved and
someone's always going to try and cheat.
Yeah. It's human nature. And now we really start focusing on eating, yeah? And on eating right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just also in the race, we try to avoid stuff that's like binding too much fluid to the body. I'm not a really, I won't say low residue, because this is something that you can only do for a couple of days. But like you're eating right, and you're eating a lot also in the race. We eat now, it's before we ate way less than now.
What do you think? What do you like to eat on the bike when you're racing?
Normally I have already, I make a plan. Let's say I check the route. We get the information where will be our feeding. So where you get the musette and everything. Maybe I put also some, like my musette in the car. So let's say maybe like for last 70Ks, I put some gels, my gels, if I like them more, or just steam gels. So I don't have to carry all the food around. But I normally I start with rice cake.
Really?
Which I really like. Yeah, I start with rice cake.
There's like no calories in those.
Yeah, but it's carbs, yeah? We people think of, everyone thinks, okay, only about calories, but we also digest a lot of calories through, let's say, through liquid.
Yeah.
With in the beans, yeah. Not just we don't put only iso, but we also put like the other carbs in the
bottles. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that helps, yeah. Because for me, I always like to start with rice cake, then I switch to bars. And then I switched to gel.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. What do you think equipment wise, you guys are on those Simplon bikes. Have you been riding those before, or is this the first year?
So this will be now the third different frame that we will be riding.
Tell me about those. I saw it online. It looks awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They say this is the fastest road bike. At the moment, I mean, it sounds good. Yeah,
you're like, I'm in. I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah.
What size tires are you riding?
I ride 28.
Mm. When did you make the change over to that?
I tried everything.
Okay.
I like to try things. Cool. I'm not like. I also like to try different brands. Let's say from the start of this. And now we switched from 23, and around 2014 we switched to 25, 26, and then 2 years, maybe 2018, we switched to 20, from 25 to 28.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are still, you know, juggling between there and left and right. It also depends on the course that we are riding.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are also switching from riding tubulars to tubeless.
Interesting.
So. Yeah, and also in the team, we are sponsored, but we can ride our own tires if we want to. So, okay. Which is really cool that the team allows us to do that, because, you know, when you have something that you feel comfortable on, it makes you much faster.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Yeah.
What is your, let's talk about coaching real quickly. I know we probably got about 10 minutes left or so. What's your training philosophy from like a big picture? How do you look at training in order to make somebody else a better cyclist?
Well, first, they need to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
One thing is that if you improve, then it makes you happy. Yeah? Mm-hmm. But for me, first thing it starts with just, you know, my client's well-being. So I try to get to know them as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
From a point that, because everything affects coaching, and everything affects, so coaching and let's say riding bike affect your normal life, and your normal life affects riding a bike.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get this information, like, and a lot of my clients were really adaptive with that. So they went into by themselves, they went into hoop. So you can see some guys bought HRV devices. Some guys we're weighing each time. So, you know, when you're getting as much data as are useful, then it's much easier. And also I like that to speak with them in terms of how they are and also how it's work, how it's family.
Mm-hmm.
And then from, I would normally start with that. And then
that's,
from
there, I want to reiterate that part of how is work, how is family, because it still amazes me when people that have trained for a while will be, you know, they'll post in their comments how they didn't perform well in their workout, and then they'll mention all these other things going on in life, and they don't draw the connection between the two. And
yeah,
my schedule is much different now in only coaching, but when I was doing medical device sales, sometimes you're in the hospital at 6:30 in the morning. You didn't leave till 4:00. You go on and get on the bike at like 5:30. If you had a great day, you're still like flying high and you might have a great workout. If you didn't have a great day, you might be tired. And it's just like, man, who am I today? This sucks. And so much, or like people move, or just big things happening in life affect training. And I think most cyclists have that go get it attitude. And when it doesn't, when the body and brain don't show up, they get disappointed. And so that's huge to have that. It's clear you're seeing the 30,000 foot overview. You're seeing them as a whole person, not just what the metric might be telling you or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. If you stand, let's say if you're working in a normal job and you stand on your feet for the whole day,
mm-hmm.
you know, your feet will get swollen. And it's no way that you can do your maximum at 5
mm-hmm.
When you finish working. And also, if you have to wake up early, then, you know, you came back from bike from, let's say, 7. Then before your body unwinds, and it's already 11, 12, and then you sleep only 6 hours. And, you know, that pattern continues. And this, as a coach, I think this is really important, yeah, that you need to take this into aspect. It's not like when you're coaching a pro rider, it's much different than coaching a normal guy who works, or a girl, I have to say also that.
That is the tricky part when someone's trying to just totally burn the candle at both ends. And I can think of a few people where I'm like, you know, the biggest, I'll put on the training calendar, sleep. You might need to cut this 3-hour ride this weekend to 2 if you need to get some extra sleep. It is so important.
Yeah, and also what is funny for me that sometimes like an amateur is way more motivated to train than a pro rider. And like this over-motivation that actually kills them, yeah? When this motivation that you can use to gain results actually kills you because you want to do too much.
That is so interesting. I've never really thought about it that way.
And, you know, I have a client that he makes, you know, he's a perfect client. He does everything. And I can do, you know, million things with him. But sometimes his motivation is, you know, it's so big that it actually is hurting him. Like I said, like, you need to go slow. You need to go slow.
Mm-hmm.
And he cannot, you know. And then the whole structure of the training can get affected because you do too much, and then this multiplies every time till you crack or not perform as good as you can.
And that's the thing. It's hard to see by yourself. It's that long-term fatigue. It's that you're good. You can pull this off for 2 months. You can't pull it off for 4 or 5 months. And when people crack, then they're like, wait, I'm not fit. I need to do more. And it's this bad cycle that starts. It's
so for me, when I go, let's say I look at the macro picture, not the micro, a big picture in training peaks, and you can see the improvement. It's not like a straight line. It always has like to be like a jigsaw coming up.
Yes, stair step.
So it's like the body is adapting. It's also you need time to recover. Yeah, it cannot be a straight line. And it's like a constant improvement. It's not, you cannot do this long term.
I wish I had constant improvement for 13 years. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because, well, I think it's also that's, you know, I talked to Cody Stevenson, a guy from Training Peaks, and just how do we, it's hard to conceptualize like depth and just the ability to do efforts later in a race or the accumulated benefits of having 10 years of training versus 3 years of training. And everybody wants a metric for everything, and everything that counts can't be counted. And it's, I understand that everybody wants to number every single thing as we have a lot of metrics, but it's just not endurance sports. And I'm so pumped to look back in 20 years on what we think is the gold standard and how things change. And we're just still so new in this that it's excited. That's what excites me. That, you know, somebody commented to me one time, they're like, I appreciate your candidness in some of these podcasts because you don't act like you know everything. And I'm like, okay, I definitely don't know everything, and nobody does. No, like the best people in the world don't know everything. There's still so much to learn. So it's
no, I for me, like even I would never say I know everything. It's like it's not possible. And also, if you look at what we did 5 years ago, and we said, ah, that's a silly now. And in 5 years, we'll be, ah, this was also silly. We could do that better.
Yeah.
And it is, for me, it's always a learning curve. Yeah. And always. That's what makes it fun. Yeah, it's not, it's never a something. Okay, you, there's like endurance is endurance, but everything else, it's like, ooh, so much time and so fun. And
things, the season to season training isn't the same. Like I think back, I've tried different things, and I've tried things that didn't work, and I've tried things that worked better. And then you, it's this, and then it's like, thing number one might not work now, but in 3 years when you have 30,000 more miles in you, then you try thing one, then it works. Yeah. And it's like things click at different points in time for different athletes. And okay, so my big question then at the end, well, not the big question, but coming up in an hour, what do you think is a good piece of advice for an amateur that is trying to go pro and get to that next level? Or, and I actually want to tweak this also, or for an amateur that maybe they're not going pro because a lot of people find the sport later in life, but they get to race pros. They get to do like a P1-2 race, or I don't know what it would be in Europe exactly, but what's a good tip?
Well, first is train smart. Not train a lot. I won't say train a lot. Because train smart. Like do your recovery. Do your workout right. Also feel the body. Learn to know your body. Yeah? You need to know your body to because also your coach, okay, he can see a lot of data, but like your actual feeling, he cannot see. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's really important. Like. If you know yourself, you know what you are capable.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, which will be now contradictory, like always learn and push yourself harder. Yeah, like, and it's not only from physical aspect, but also from mental aspect. Mental is more for me. Mental is more important, especially mm-hmm. in cycling. Let's say you do a lot of heavy race, and if you're like mentally good, you will come over the climb.
Mm-hmm.
If you're mentally weak, then you will drop 500 to go, and then you'll be asking yourself, why did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And because and what is important is learn how to race. It's trickier than people think. Mm-hmm. Because they're in a race, there's so many small things that matter. I cannot stress how important that is.
Huge.
Like, especially if you race alone, if you don't have a team that will just pull you on the front all the time and do everything for you, cover the moves. You know, you need to be smart. You need to be, pick a couple of guys that you need to follow. When he's a pro guys, it's much easier because you already know on who to focus on. Mm-hmm. And eventually you will hit the right note. Learn how to corner. This is also important. Learn how to keep position.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, so you're not all over front, back, and learn how to fix position. People tend to fix position on the side. Let's say you go back through the peloton, and then you go left or right, and then, you know, go 600 watts to the front, which is not smart. You burn a lot. You know, if you do this for 20 times, you know, that's so, a lot of, yeah.
How do you do that? What's the, what do you, where do you start to do that? So you're only getting this experience in races. How do you learn to get comfortable, and how do you move up if you're not moving up on the side?
I always try to move up in the middle. Not everyone does it, but we have Italian school of cycling, which based a lot on sprint when you were young. Mm-hmm. So you need to learn how to ride in the peloton. Mm-hmm. But you always, in the peloton, there's always a natural movement, mm-hmm. which you need to follow. Yeah? You need to think, it's like playing chess. Yeah, you think in advance what can happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's much easier because there will be some pattern that will always come up. Let's say there's a right corner. The bunch automatically goes to the right in the corner, and then when you come out of the corner, there's, you know, this movement where you can easily, let's say, find a spot to move on. And there's always someone that will make a space. Yeah? You don't have to force the space. You know, it should feel like, I don't know, Mr. Miyagi, and space will
appear.
Find you. Yeah.
Yeah. Part the sea. Who was that? Biblical, not Moses. Gosh, I should know who that is. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Moses? Yeah. Moses.
Yeah. And sometimes you know, you save so much things with that if you go like that. And also, when you go in the race, study the race. You need to know where are the dangerous points, where are the small bits, where everything is. The more data you have, the better it is.
That's something I've tried to get better at throughout the years. And it's crucial, just knowing when climbs, not even climbs, like crazy corners, things where crashes will be, you know, planning.
I mean, there are
little things that one thing that saved me this past year was a race where we looked at where the feed zone was, and I was like, we're going to be going 30 miles an hour through that feed zone. And someone's like, no way. I'm like, look, it's downhill. If there's a tailwind at this time, I'm like, that feed zone is going to be carnage. And I actually used big bottles, brought a bottle. And I was like, if you miss a bottle, and the laps were really long, I'm like, if you miss a bottle, you're screwed. So instead of doing, I came with so much water, and all I got was ice socks through it. And a couple people missed bottles and just died. And it was just, I mean, it's unfortunate that's a bad race setup, but it is what it is. And that's one of the first times I really can say that, like, pre-thinking about little random things paid off big time. But
yeah, I mean, if you think in advance, then it's much easier. Let's say, okay, there are, in a race, there are focal points. Let's say in France, maybe you hit the cobbles, or in Belgium, there are still always some things that you need to, you know, everyone knows it, that is coming, and there is always stress about it. And there are the points that you don't move up too early, so you don't spend 10Ks doing nothing on the front and maybe killing 40 of your teammates. It happens. And also, let's say when you say now through the feeding zone, sometimes teams bring bidons before and then push through the feeding zone, so no one can take the feeding back.
Wow.
You know, you always have to be thinking in advance and being prepared that this might happen. Yeah.
Any parting words that you want to get across for the people watching?
I want to say something else. This is for all the American guys trying to go to Europe. Yeah? It's much harder for you guys than it's for us, because we are here. Okay, maybe you need to move to another country, but it's much easier. Also, the culture, we are adapted, you know. But for you guys, this is much, much harder, especially coming to France or Belgium and staying in a shitty apartment trying to fulfill their dreams, and then you see that your dreams are not so shiny.
Yeah.
I think, you know, persevere, you know, persevere, and, you know, everything bad you learn in cycling will get you somewhere. Yeah. Not only in cycling, but maybe in your future job, or, you know, maybe when shit will hit the fan later on in your life, you will learn something there. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a really good thing for you to point out. I've known a few people that have gone to Europe, and a few have come back very quickly. Others that have stayed there have talked about just, hey, I'm in this small town in France. It's pretty lonely. There's so much besides the racing. And then I think a lot of people forget that if you're a pro, that is now your job. And that changes some things about the race day. And that's one of the biggest things that we've talked about that I'm really, really, really pumped to have you on board, is that we have some athletes that are trying to go pro in Europe, and I cannot, none of us, Alex has more experience riding in that and around those types of riders than the rest of us. And so to have you able to have that experience, have the knowledge of all these other things that unless you live it, I can't, you know, people always talk, another example, people always like, why don't you coach triathlons? I'm like, I don't run. I don't swim. That's like, I can't, I'm not going to fake that. I'm not going to fake trying to say like, I know everything about being a pro, because I don't. Sure, I can make somebody faster, but they're to make this your job and take that next step. I'm super pumped to see the athletes that we can link up with you. And
I mean, I'm also happy that I can, you know, that I can help your clients or somebody else from the company, because, you know, if maybe I'm not the best coach for him, which, you know, it can be you, but I can give you an advice, or give you advice. And that's, I'm also pumped, because you also have, your knowledge that you are really willing to share with me, which also makes me better and
stronger really together.
Yeah.
Stronger together. That's what I'm, you know, when you came on, someone said, "Bam, we're getting bigger." I said, "We're not getting bigger. We're getting stronger." And that's the best thing is, I love the coaches' calls, and every once in a while we post those, because they turn into basically a podcast talking about cycling stuff. It's just, it's a really exciting time. Man, I appreciate you doing this at night. I know you got stuff going on with the family and whatnot. Well, I'm looking forward to doing some more coaches' calls. And the thing you had talked about too, the in-race, like, details and little things, that I think that would be a really interesting one to do. And there, man, we could just, anybody that's been in the pro peloton as long as you, we can just talk. There's so many things to talk about. So
I mean, I'm like a, you know, like these old guys in a pub.
not yet. Man, well, Andy, thanks, man, for doing this. We'll talk more soon, and hope you have a good rest of the night. And we'll have we'll start plugging the Slovenia trip and get some more US people.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. It will be fun. And
let's plant that seed right now. So it's LaTap Slovenia. It's September. What's the date? Fourth.
Yeah. It will go through birthplace of Matej Mohoric and also Tadej Pogacar. And it will be in the middle of the Alps, close to Lake Bled. You can also check that out. A lot of Americans normally use it. And 10K from the airport and 10K from our capital.
So, and it's warm. And it's warm at that point of the year there.
Yeah, we are not Siberia here. It will be like 25 to 30 degrees. I don't know what that's in Fahrenheit.
Yeah, it's warming up. Shorts and a jersey.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
You'll need to open it in the climb. Yeah.
Awesome. And I will be there. I'm coming. I'm getting my tickets in probably a week or two. I just bought tickets for another place, so I'm trying to wait till the next billing cycle. But I'm going to be coming there, because I might be doing like a honeymoon in Italy afterwards. But LaTap, legit. And we'll talk more about that.
Yeah. I think you'll be surprised how nice it is.
Oh, and, no, I know how nice it is. I'm excited. I mean, I'm, yeah, it's, and that's it's an area of the world I've never really been to. I think the most Eastern Europe I've been to was Croatia. I love that. And I wasn't there long enough and I didn't have a bike. And plus you and Alex are there. So I'm pumped to hang out. Alex messaged me after I said I was coming. He's like, you really coming? And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm coming next year. He's like, I can't wait to ride. Like, this is what's amazing about the internet. I know Alex, we work together. He, you know, how long have we been chatting, but never seen each other in real life.
Yeah.
Super pumped. It's going to be awesome. Yeah.
I think you will never go to Italy. I think you'll just stay in Slovenia.
That would be a tough call. I would. Actually, that's maybe not a bad idea. Make two trips. Hey, man. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
I'm really happy to do this. And
tell number four we said goodnight.
Yeah, I think he's waiting for me. So it's great.
Perfect.
Okay.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. See ya.
Yeah. We see us on Monday, yeah?
So. Yeah. Monday. Yes, Monday. We'll chat on Monday.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
See you, Andy. Take care.
See ya.